World War ended 75 years ago, and a shrinking number are old enough to remember it firsthand. Those who fought in that terrible war and those civilians who endured it are dying off. They were my parents' generation, and it was etched deeply on their minds and hearts. I remember them taking me to the American Cemetery in Cambridge, England. The Memorial Day ceremonies included a plane flyover to drop flowers from the sky over the precisely aligned white crosses where 3,812 Americans were buried. And a wall contained the names of 5,127 others that were missing in action. It was an impressive sight, but my 12-year-old mind couldn't take in the meaning of it all. For that matter, who can? While a cemetery is a meaningful reality of the conflict, it hardly encompasses the total brutality of a fight that engulfed the whole world and cut short the lives of some 60 to 70 million people, with far more bearing physical and emotional scars. After the greatest conflict in mankind's history, we're still looking for a way to peace. There have been dozens of wars in the intervening 75 years, but all limited in scope in comparison. One must ask, are we making progress toward a more peaceful world? Surely there will never be a World War III. Nations are not that foolish. Or are they? Have we seen the war to end war? Can mankind learn the way to peace? There are answers to these questions, and the answers may surprise you. There is good news. So stay tuned. A warm welcome to all of you from all of us here at Tomorrow's World, where I'm asking whether there will ever be an end to war. Twice in the last century, the world was brought into conflicts where tens of millions of lives were lost. Could such a thing happen again in our modern civilized world? Robert Kagan gives us a warning from the past in his 2018 book, The Jungle Grows Back. As the British author and politician Norman Angell observed in 1909, the world's great civilized powers had passed out of that stage of development in which any nation could benefit from conquering another by force. Reasoned calculations of self-interest precluded war among them. In a world of growing prosperity, democracy, and increasing connection among peoples, great power war was obsolete. He explains how delusional that thinking was, and in effect cautions us against similar delusions. They could not imagine the world's leading commercial powers, so interdependent in the modern global economy, would wage a war for such primitive goals as territory and military domination, that they would be inspired not by rational calculations of interest, but by fear, pride, and ambition. And that war would enjoy the enthusiastic backing of their people fueled by nationalism and tribalism. Yet Angell and the politicians and people of his day were terribly wrong. It would only be 5 years from when Angell made those predictions until the greatest conflict in humanity's history up to that time. World War I killed an estimated 20 million, with another 21 million carrying with them the physical scars of human conflict. United States President Woodrow Wilson called it the war to end all wars. And that too was an illusion. Such numbers are staggering and can only be understood properly on the personal level, as brought out so dramatically in the 1929 novel, All Quiet on the Western Front, where he strips away the glamour of war and brings it down to what it means for the common soldier. The most poignant chapter describes the inner thoughts of Paul, a German soldier, as he sits in a foxhole with Gerard, a Frenchman he mortally wounded. Two world wars and even the threat of global extermination through the use of nuclear weapons have not been enough to scare mankind into lasting peace. Since the collapse of the Soviet Union, we've seen wars in the Congo claim the lives of millions. 800,000 dead in the Rwandan genocide, and nearly as many in Iraq and Afghanistan. Civil wars waged today in Syria and Yemen, while Ethiopia and Eritrea engage in what many are calling the Forgotten War. This does not even take into account the conflict in the Ukraine. Given mankind's propensity for avarice and the game of war, the future looks bleak, and any realist would conclude that there will never be a time of genuine peace. So is that the final answer to our question? Or is there a surprise on the horizon? Is there any realistic hope that peace can come to our troubled planet? Yes, my friends, there is. There's a statue near the United Nations in New York with these words inscribed on it. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. Do you know where these words come from? They come from Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 4 and the book of all books, the Bible. The same words are also repeated in the biblical book of Micah. Is this a mere pipe dream? It is, according to one former United States president. Richard Nixon well understood the world and how it operates. He understood the mind of man on a geopolitical scale and how self-interest is at the heart of every nation's foreign policy. In his book, Real Peace, Mr. Nixon chided poets, authors, and songwriters about such dreamy ideas of peace. Those who make peace at the typing table rather than at the negotiating table have the luxury of being peacemakers without having to grapple with complex problems in the rough and tumble world of real international diplomacy. To them, the only obstacle to peace is the regrettable lack of leaders who are as selfless and idealistic as they claim to be, and who are willing to put aside parochial national interests in the interest of bringing peace to the world. They hope that this era will be the one in which self-interest, the force that has driven history since the dawn of history, will simply evaporate. So we must ask, who's correct? The Bible or the late President of the United States? This is no trivial question. To this date, we must agree with Mr. Nixon. But should we dismiss the biblical record as merely the dream of idealistic men? I'll give you a clear answer to that question shortly. But first, I want to offer you a resource that explains what to expect in the not-too-distant future. Our booklet, Prophecy Fulfilled, answers the question of whether or not we can trust the prophecies of the Bible and offer insights into what those prophecies mean for you and me. It explains what is going on in our world today, something many people talk about, but few really understand. If you would like to know what is happening right now and what to expect in the near future, call the number shown on your screen to receive your free copy of Prophecy Fulfilled. Call, write, or go to our website, twcanada.org, for your free copy. And I'll be back in a minute to show you who is correct, the Bible or Mr. Nixon.
For today's free offer, call 866-784-7895. Or go to twtv.org/fulfilled. This clear and straightforward resource will help you understand this vital truth straight from the pages of the Bible. If you're calling for the first time, you will also receive a free subscription to Tomorrow's World magazine. This inspiring magazine discusses news, science, and modern culture, and will help you make sense of your world from a biblical perspective. Call today and join millions around the world who are turning to Tomorrow's World for truth, prophecy, and hope in these confusing times. Call now or go to twcanada.org.
Before the break, I said I would answer the question as to who is correct. Former President Richard Nixon or the Bible. While he did not have the complete answer regarding peace, Mr. Nixon correctly understood the problem behind why we have war. He recognized it is man's nature and understood that the only hope to change human nature falls in the realm of religion. But Mr. Nixon never placed hope in religion coming to our rescue. In fact, he attributed religion as part of the problem. In the long term, we can hope that religion will change the nature of man and reduce conflict. But history is not encouraging in this respect. The bloodiest wars in history have been religious wars. Men praying to the same God killed each other by the thousands in America's Civil War and by the millions in World War I and World War II. Unless men change, a real peace must be built on the assumption that the most that we can do is to learn to live with our differences rather than dying over them. Another pragmatist is the late Soviet Union President Mikhail Gorbachev, a man who, by his actions as well as his words, sought a more peaceable world. Looking past the COVID-19 crisis, he wrote in Time magazine, "While it is the national governments that now bear the brunt of making difficult choices, future decisions will have to be made by the entire world community. We have so far failed to develop and implement strategies and goals common to all mankind." He then asked the following rhetorical question: "Is it not clear by now that wars and the arms race cannot solve today's global problems? War is a sign of defeat, a failure of politics. I'll never tire of repeating, we need to demilitarize world affairs, international politics, and political thinking." Gorbachev concluded by calling on world leaders to come together at the United Nations to hold an emergency session and revise the global agenda. He then suggested that nations cut military spending by 10 to 15% as a first step. But is either Nixon or Gorbachev correct in their pessimism? Mr. Nixon did not understand or believe the biblical message, and neither did Mr. Gorbachev. But exactly what is that message, and how can it come to pass? As we already saw, the prophet Isaiah spoke of a time when men would beat their swords into plowshares, indicating a time of peace. But when? When will we ever see peace? The book of Micah, chapter 4, verse 1, answers this question. "Now it shall come to pass in the latter days." The latter days and similar expressions are found in the Bible to indicate a time in the future when God will intervene very directly in human affairs. These latter days will be marked by rebellion and violence, and God's patience will have run out. The prophet Jeremiah predicted these rebellious times and declares in Jeremiah 23 and verse 20, "The anger of the Lord will not turn back until he has executed and performed the thoughts of his heart. In the latter days, you will understand it perfectly." All of this will become clear in the latter days, at the time of the end. We've quoted numerous times here at Tomorrow's World the words of Jesus in Matthew 24, where his disciples asked him, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" After rehearsing major signs, Jesus gives this summary: "For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved." I ask at the beginning of this section, which view is correct, the Bible or Mr. Nixon? The answer is that both agree that man's efforts for peace will fail. And the Apostle Paul quotes the prophet Isaiah saying, "And the way of peace they have not known." And Jesus even went so far as to predict that mankind would come to the point of self-annihilation. So how can war and peace both be correct? Very simply, there is a climax coming in world affairs which will lead to a time of trouble such as the world has never known. And world war will be a major feature of that time. However, the Bible predicts something that political leaders fail to see, something foretold as part of the prophecy predicting the birth of Jesus Christ. This is found in the 9th chapter of the book of Isaiah. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder. And his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. Clearly, his first coming did not result in a peace with no end. This is speaking of his return, something political leaders fail to consider. We'll look at the future predicted in the pages of the Bible in a minute. But let me remind you again of today's free offer, Prophecy Fulfilled, God's Hand in World Affairs. This resource explains what will happen leading up to that predicted time of peace, what you can expect. Some of the questions addressed include, will Jesus Christ return tonight? How does God know in advance what will happen? Does the Bible mention the USA, UK, and Canada? Why the Great Tribulation? What is tomorrow's world? Just pick up the phone and call for your free copy of this informative resource, Prophecy Fulfilled, or go to our website at twcanada.org. It's that simple. There's no cost, no one will hit you up for money, and your personal information will not be sold to anyone. I'll be back in a minute or so to show you what the Bible says about the future of war and peace.
This clear and straightforward resource will help you understand this vital truth straight from the pages of the Bible. Call now or go to twtv.org/fulfilled.
Today we are asking whether there will ever be an end to war. Students of history have little confidence that real lasting peace will ever come to pass. Even now we see raw human nature on many fronts. Can mankind discover the path to peace? Tolstoy's War and Peace may make a good read on a snowy day, but it's the Bible that gives the real story of war and peace. Based on history, how can the Bible predict so confidently that peace is in our future? Richard Nixon came very close to the answer. He saw the problem, but not the solution. As he wrote, in the long term, we can hope that religion will change the nature of man and reduce conflict. However, he observed the utter failure of religion to change the nature of man. But history is not encouraging in this respect. The bloodiest wars in history have been religious wars. Men praying to the same God killed each other by the thousands in America's Civil War, and by the millions in World War I and World War II, unless men change. Thousands of years of man's history prove that religions of all stripes, including professing Christianity, have failed to solve the problem. But the object of right religion, that is, the true creator of mankind, is able to change human nature, and he reveals that he will. The Bible tells us that God made a covenant with the ancient nation of Israel. In short, he said, if you obey my law, my commandments, I will bless you above all people on the face of the earth. So he revealed to the children of Israel 10 commandments. Most people are more or less familiar with them, but let's review them in a shortened and paraphrased form. You shall have no other gods before the only true God. You shall not use images in the worship of the true God. Don't take God's name in vain. Remember the seventh day to keep it holy. Honor your mother and your father. You shall not kill. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. You shall not covet anything that is your neighbor's. These commands seem simple enough, and Israel wanted God's protection and blessing. But there was a problem, human nature. Notice how God figuratively groaned at Israel's lack of respect for the covenant. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 29. Oh, that they had such a heart in them that they would fear me and always keep all my commandments, that it might be well with them and with their children forever. God is not very flattering toward Israel. And by Israel, I do not mean only the small nation called by that name at the east end of the Mediterranean Sea. Israel refers to far more than the Jews in that nation and scattered abroad. It refers not to the tribe of Judah only, but to all 12 tribes, a distinction that even students of the Bible fail to recognize. And God describes all 12 tribes in the most unflattering terms: backsliding, treacherous, rebellious, impudent, and hard-hearted. And he describes Gentile kingdoms as wild, devouring beasts in Daniel chapter 7 and 8, and Revelation chapters 13 and 17. The problem that transcends race, nationality, tribe, and gender is with our human heart, our human nature. So the question remains, how to change the heart of man? Religion has been around for thousands of years, but all have failed to change human nature on a scale necessary for peace. But there is good news, my friends. There is coming a change of human heart. Notice Ezekiel, the 11th chapter, in verse 19. Then I will give them one heart, and I will put a new spirit within them, and take the stony heart out of their flesh, and give them a heart of flesh. Well, what is the purpose of that new heart? The answer is found in the next verse: that they may walk in my statutes and keep my judgments and do them, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God. The Apostle Paul explains the problem very succinctly in Romans, the 8th chapter, and verse 7. Because the carnal, that is, the human mind, is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. Why is it, my friends, that people think that the new covenant does away with the law of God? As we have just seen, God gives a new heart for the very purpose that they may walk in my statutes and keep my judgments. Jeremiah 31 and verses 31 to 34 describes the new covenant. But let's read it in the New Testament. After explaining the problem of the first covenant, which was with the people, Paul quotes Jeremiah. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Lord. I will put my laws in their mind and write them on their hearts. Can anyone explain how this, in any way, does away with the law of God, as many evangelicals profess? Here is what the New Bible Commentary Revised says about this exact same statement as it is originally recorded in Jeremiah. What then will the Lord do? He must either reduce his demands until they are within the range of human powers, or else he must change the heart of men. It is to the latter that he commits himself. Explaining the words "my law" in this passage, the commentary goes on to say, the law reflects the nature of God and therefore is unchanging. God cannot reduce his standards without ceasing to be himself. But now the whole inner constitution of men, their hearts, is to be fashioned by God to match the requirements of his law. And in this way, the great covenant promise, I will be their God and they shall be my people, will be fulfilled. That which changes the heart is the Spirit of God in us. But if that is the case, why don't we see real peace among those who claim to have that Spirit? I'll answer that question and give the missing dimension in a moment. But I want to remind you of our resource that explains the difficult times ahead. Just order today's resource, Prophecy Fulfilled, God's Hand in World Affairs. All you have to do is call the number on your screen or go to twcanada.org for your free copy. As explained in this booklet, the Bible predicts the rise of a power in Europe that will bring a level of warfare on a scale we can hardly imagine. This will necessitate the intervention of God to stop the insanity. And this, in turn, will make peace possible. A new spirit will be poured out on mankind. But that's not all. The spirit that currently rules this world must be turned away. We read about that rebellious spirit in Ephesians 2 chapter, verses 1 and 2. "And you he made alive, who were dead in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience." As long as that evil spirit, Satan the devil, is still around, there can be no peace. That's why one of the first things Jesus will do upon his return is to have that being removed, no longer allowing him to influence mankind. We read of this in Revelation, the 20th chapter, and the first two verses. "Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven. He laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. Yes, peace will be possible once the prince of the power of the air is removed and God pours out his spirit on all flesh. The laws of God that bring peace will be written in the hearts of men. And that, my friends, is how human nature will be changed. But before that happens, we're in for a very difficult time, as explained in our resource, Prophecy Fulfilled, God's Hand in World Affairs. The confusion we see in our world should not come as a surprise. It was foretold in prophecies recorded for us in Scripture, prophecies you can be sure of. You need to know what is coming and how to protect yourself and your family. So don't delay. Order our free resource, Prophecy Fulfilled, and do it now before you forget. History, the pages of the Bible, and even Richard Nixon agree that mankind will not be able to find an end to war without a significant change in human nature. However, the Bible offers words of hope and encouragement that such a change is not only possible, it is prophesied, and mankind will ultimately be led into a time of lasting peace. Be sure to come back next week when Stuart Wachowicz, Michael Haykoop, and I will continue to share with you the revelation of Jesus Christ, the good news of the coming kingdom of God, and the exciting end time prophecies and their meaning.
For today's free offer, call 866-784-7895 or go to twtv.org/fulfilled. Call today and join millions around the world who are turning to tomorrow's world for truth, prophecy, and hope in these confusing times. The preceding program is produced by the Living Church of God.